From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. The historian William Lichtenberg calls Justice Robert Jackson the most important public figure of the 20th century no one has ever heard of. During the New Deal, Robert Jackson was a confidant of President Franklin D. Roosevelt. He served as Solicitor General and Attorney General before Roosevelt named him a Justice of the United States Supreme Court, where he was known for, among other things, his lucid writing. After World War II, Jackson took leave from the court to serve as the chief U.S. prosecutor at the Nuremberg War Trials, and his address to the tribunal remains a landmark in human rights law.
The wrongs which we seek to condemn and punish have been so calculated, so malignant, and so devastating that civilization cannot tolerate their being ignored.
Now, nearly 50 years after his death, Justice Jackson has added to the record that he left behind. Law professor John Q. Barrett, while working on a Jackson biography, discovered a manuscript that Jackson wrote but never published. It is an insider's portrait of FDR called That Man. Welcome, Professor Barrett.
Thank you very much.
And first, that phrase, that man, which I suppose for authenticity's sake should be uttered with an upper-class accent in a mood of some complaint.
That's right. That man was the derisive way that Roosevelt haters referred to the president. They loathed him so much they couldn't bear to speak his name, so they would speak sneeringly of that man in the White House.
My business would be doing fine now, but for that man.
That man.
How did Justice Robert Jackson's manuscript, That Man, get lost for so long?
Well, Jackson died suddenly of a heart attack in October 1954. Thereafter, a file labeled Roosevelt Book was shipped from his chambers at the Supreme Court by his secretary to Jackson's son, who was then a young lawyer rising in a large Manhattan law firm. And his son got busy with his own life, kept this file, guarded it carefully, but never developed it or used it, and it was in family possession for almost 50 years.
Well, by 1954, when Justice Jackson died, there were already many books that had been written about FDR, including some by insiders, and there have been many more since. Do we learn anything new about Roosevelt in this book?
Well, I think in two ways we learn a lot that's new about Roosevelt. In our time, 2003, it really brings to life a person who we've come to think about as a monument near the mall, as a face on the dime, but not as a living, breathing, thinking, acting, brilliant person, and that comes through. As a matter of Roosevelt historiography, it also adds the moments and the vantage points that Jackson uniquely had, because he was in the inner circles for about 5 years in the second, going into the third term. And he chronicles Roosevelt, warts and all, in that range of roles.
I like especially when, I think it's a cabinet meeting, when somebody mentions a development in China, and President Roosevelt asks if people are familiar with that part of the coast of China, and then what, he proceeds to actually draw the coast of China.
He draws freehand a map of the Chinese coast, and later in the meeting, actual charts and maps are brought in, and the president's map bears a startling accuracy. Much better than his Secretary of War, his Secretary of Navy, or the other cabinet officers could have done.
Jackson writes that FDR explained that when he was, first felled by polio, he became preoccupied with geography, and he studied maps and studied countries all over the world from his stamp collection.
That's right. It started with his stamp collecting. He would collect foreign stamps and then call for books that would give him background information on the countries from which the stamps came. And from that, he would learn geography. Polio restricted a lot of his movement, and he really began to use his mind to travel in a way that his legs no longer permitted.
Yes, Jackson remarks at some point that Roosevelt, more than other people he knew who were president, Truman, Eisenhower, Roosevelt really liked being president. He enjoyed it.
He did. Jackson puts it in a nicely understated way. He said Roosevelt could not do a lot of things because of his disability, but he could be president and really embraced it and relished it.
Before Robert Jackson joined the Supreme Court, he was involved in Franklin Delano Roosevelt's attempt to, as we say, pack the Supreme Court. The president was frustrated by a conservative court in the 1930s that was declaring key elements of the New Deal unconstitutional.
The court, in addition to the proper use of its judicial functions, has improperly set itself up as a third house of the Congress, a super legislature, as one of the justices has called it, reading into the Constitution words and implications which are not there and which were never intended to be there. We have therefore reached the point as a nation where we must take action to save the Constitution from the court and the court from itself.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1937. Let's observe that was a liberal president complaining about the Supreme Court. He, of course, had a scheme to add extra justices to the court that in some way would get his administration a more sympathetic hearing. What do we learn from Robert Jackson about all that?
Well, one thing that's very interesting about the clip you just played is that it's the true explanation. And that's one of the things that Jackson was instrumental in moving Roosevelt to. Roosevelt's initial description of the court packing plan described it as based in sympathy for the aged justices who were behind in their work. And that was a piece of spin that just didn't accurately explain what was going on. Jackson, in his public testimony, sweeping up after this mess, begins to articulate what the president came to articulate. And Jackson really is the counsel for truth-telling about the fundamentally conservative aspect of the court packing proposal, that it was there to get the court out of the way of the democratically elected branches.
One of Jackson's observations about Roosevelt is that although Roosevelt was nominally at least a lawyer and had been a lawyer, this man didn't think like a lawyer, he said. He didn't think in terms of what was legal or illegal, and this was important to Jackson because he was the Attorney General and the Solicitor General before that. He thought in terms of what was right and what was wrong.
Right and wrong and necessary. Roosevelt had an impatience with the legal process, which involves deliberation, approval, layered decision-making. And sometimes Roosevelt saw very clearly from where he was to where he wished to go. And the legalities in between those two points weren't of much concern to him.
One issue that arose during wartime was a particular German princess who was regarded as a spy, I gather, and Roosevelt simply concluded, well, given that, we should deport her.
That's right. She had, FBI surveillance showed, extensive relationships suggesting she was an intermediary between diplomatic officials of Hitler's government and other German nationals in the United States. And Jackson got bogged down in legal and technical problems like the absence of a country that would accept her.
So we can't deport her? There's no place to deport
her? There's no place to send her to. And Roosevelt, in his impatience and with his sense of humor, began to refer to her as Jackson's girlfriend.
And he being one of the few people who... She was not his girlfriend, I gather. That was not an exclusive club, but he wasn't part of it.
I don't believe he ever made her acquaintance.
All right. John Barrett, thank you very much for talking with
us. Thank
you,
Robert.
John Q. Barrett is the editor of That Man, an insider's portrait of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. It's based on a manuscript that was recently discovered but written more than 50 years ago by Robert H. Jackson, then a justice of the United States Supreme Court.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.